Blog Talk Radio.
Of Enlightenment. We're filling in for Louie Wildo, who has been under the weather. And we're hoping she'll be back very soon. In the meantime, you're kind of stuck with me. So my eyes and Pam Ray and Laurent is with us tonight. Thank you both for joining me. And we have front page picks and open poetry and all that good stuff that Louie gathers up for us. And Pam, I'm going to kick it over to you, and you can start whenever you're ready, with whatever.
All right.
There we go.
And did you say we have Laurent with us?
Yes, we do.
Wonderful. Hi, Laurent. How's it going?
Good, Pam. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know what? Our weather has been a lot cooler. Got out of the house today, ran some errands. I don't know. Life is just good, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody's got it hot.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. But, yeah, that was absolutely beautiful intro music, I have to say. Man, right? Superb.
It's kind of a Spanish guitar, so I'm thinking of Spanish, not Italian, like I suggested.
Yeah, you know what? I think Spanish makes more sense. I would be guessing either way, but, you know, Spanish would make more sense, given, as you said, the guitar.
Flamenco.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Well, we've got a nice board of poetry tonight, as Gene was mentioning, and so we'll go ahead and move forward. And the first poem we have up is Seeds in the Wind by Vamped Vixen, and it goes like this.
Hey, Pam, we have an audio for that, hon.
Oh, okay, my apologies. I didn't see that. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Here we go.
In Asheville, on a street corner with antique typewriter, a young woman sits writing poetry, $1 donation per poem. Give her a word, a line, a dream, and she will weave odes on index card parchment paper, stamp it with drip wax seal, and let her poems take flight to new hands, hearts, and homes. Like little bluebirds soaring the nest. This sidewalk pavement barred busker artist of the quick draw spends seconds to fill a poet's page and less time to recall her words, offering them up to passing tourists as if art is something to give freely. I think of that woman, her smile, fading souvenir on my fridge, and wonder how many of her poems now travel the world.
A dandelion seed,
she wished well and whispered to the wind.
Mm. Mm. Wonderful reading right there by Vamped Vixen. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And, Laurent, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, it looks like from the audio that she included with her reading, that she was doing a reading in front of an audience. That's a wonderful way to share a piece, which she has subsequently shared here. I love the picture of the typewriter. There's something about the typewriter that I miss. It was an interesting machine. It was hell if you made a mistake, but an interesting machine otherwise. And to use that as the main prop in her poem, I thought was very appropriate. And that's some kind of a faceless computer tablet or et cetera, but no, a good old-fashioned typewriter. And that second stanza, give her a word, a line, a dream, and she will weave odes on index card parchment paper, is a lovely way to describe what she was doing, weaving odes. And when she says, let her poems take flight, the new hands, hearts, and homes, like little bluebirds soaring the nest, she completes the image of creation and then of letting what she has created fly freely into the ether, as it were. And the comparison to a buster artist is also excellently made. The buster sings, he writes, and you end up doing the same thing. You're offering a little bit of yourself, and who knows where that little bit is going to end up. Scattered all over the world. Lovely poem.
It really is. And I like your observations that you made. And yeah, you know, I have to agree that, you know, there's something about a typewriter. It definitely takes you back in time. And the struggle was oh so real, especially if you ran out of that whiteout stuff. So, you know, you had to carefully type each word as much as possible. But, yeah, beautiful write all the way through. I love the straightforward style. You know, just the observations on somebody who willingly shares their art for a small donation. And I like how in the end line she says, I think of that woman, her smile, fading souvenir on my fridge, and wonder how many of her poems now travel the world like dandelion seeds she wished well and whispered to the wind. It's such a beautiful and thoughtful write on the sharing of a gift. So very well done. And back to you, Jean.
Thanks, Tim. Eugene, hey. Don't you start with him again.
He's in here.
Next. I thought this was great.
That time he came back.
If we do something, it wouldn't be so bad. But I did. I said there was great imagery in this piece, and it was a good story told, you know, and it appears to be something of a personal experience, something that she's, you know, seen in person. But I love the intro stanza and then the next one down. But they were all good, and they really all played a major part in the poem. So excellent job, Van. Excellent. Thanks for sharing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely good comment. And I have to apologize to Eugene. I just realized what I did. You were supposed to be posting links, but I just went ahead and stepped on your toes. Oh, my goodness gracious.
It kicked it off this one. I don't want to get that stuff. I just laughed. I went to get the next one, and I'm going, wait a minute. I didn't put up the first one. I laughed at it. You know, we're all creatures of habit, Pam. That's the way that works. Oh
yeah,
God.
Never mind me. I'm just dancing through the room, stepping on toes, tiptoeing through the tulip.
Absolutely. Hey, Robbie, how are you tonight? It's good to see you in the room. The next piece I'm going to put up also has an audio, and this is All Will Be Well by Ben Hart. And I have the audio for that, and I'm going to hit that button. Hi, Hope. Hi, Hope.
All Will Be Well. A poem by Ben Hart. All will be well, she says, to bring comfort back to a place and time. All will be well. Well, it doesn't feel like that. Sometimes I'd say, but that'd be lying, more like with every breath I take. Today I was offered cocaine and I didn't take it because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. And everyone I love has gone to bed again. Or maybe they're awake, away from here, a place and time. That felt smaller, in the plague that is absence, the pugilist staring down his gloves. And if he'd won the fight, would he have been the one she loves? Would he have been the champion? I keep telling myself that I am Adam, not Snake, Kenobi, not Maul, but every day that I wake, I feel ripe for the fall, and Eve said just take her, but I'm not that tall, because she's the moonlight and I am the cold. And that she loves everything I'm not, but I am nothing at all, so she loves only dust. She loves. She loves leaving. She loves leaving on Sundays. She loves leaving. She loves. She loves that I am an angry drunk, and that I plan on dying young. She loves me for the smoke in my lungs, and the pain in my eyes, and the black of my heart, and the way that I walk, and all I ache and call art, and the god of my youth, and the love I owe you, and the way I look nude. And the dirt on my nails, and the earth that I hail, and the people I failed, and the pain in my eyes, and the way I will die. The way I will die. How she loves the pain in my eyes. All will be well, what a lie. You couldn't have loved me for a night. Watch the dawn, watch something rise. Watch how it changes the look in your eyes. All would be well. This is the life. And I want one moment that transcends what God intended before he ends it. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Ben. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And I thought this was an amazing write by Ben. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. The main themes that I got from these strong emotive lines was the feeling of rejection and the need for understanding. I thought the feeling of rejection especially came through in that beginning of the end stanza. All will be well, what a lie. You couldn't have loved me for a night. I'm sorry. And, you know, just almost a sense of repetition. She loves leaving on Sundays. She loves leaving. She loves that I am an angry drunk. and I plan on dying young. She loves me for the smoke in my lungs and the pain in my eyes. And the pain in my eyes and the black of my heart. Sometimes no matter how dark we feel, we wish for that one person that truly understands us. I thought he really especially got raw and gritty with, today I was offered cocaine and I didn't take it because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. You know, and it's interesting because I don't think any of us, you know, have a specific good, you know what I mean? Like, okay, here's what I'm trying to say, is I think if we ponder on death, we think, you know, because we have to die anyways eventually, you know, there are better months to die than other ones. Like, you want to avoid holidays. Of course, that's not always possible, but, you know, or maybe I'm just the crazy person that thinks like that. I don't know. But I think maybe Ben does too. But anyways, a powerful emotive write, looking at that whole idea of rejection and that struggle to be understood and accepted. So wonderful lines and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts.
That was a fascinating comment, Anne. I enjoyed that. I'm not sure that it's possible just by taking cocaine to arbitrarily die, is it? I mean, it's not that far. I suppose you could overdose, but no, there had to be something there that perhaps you didn't want to feel good. But the idea of dying in the same month that I came in, as the poem reads, and then your comment on you really don't have control over when you die. You know, I got to say, my father-in-law died at Easter. His wife died at Easter 8 years later. Her grandmother, prior to that, died at Easter. There's another relative who died at Easter, close family member. What the hell is that all about? There is a time and a place to die, but sometimes strange things happen. When she describes a place and time that felt smaller, and the plague that is absent, the pugilist staring down at his gloves, if you're a boxer, you know, you're looking outwards at the audience. It's a wide, wide world. If you lose, all of a sudden it's you and your gloves, and the world shrinks. And when he says, a place and time that felt smaller in the plague that is absence, same thing without his love. The world, which was once a bright, buoyant, wide open thing, now shrinks down to the sensation of absence. There's a real lack of cheer, of hope in this poem. It's like the depths of despair where nothing good is ever going to happen again. He uses a very effective technique of repetition in that one long stanza, and the pain in my eyes and the black of my heart and the way that I walk, all the way down to how she loves the pain in my eyes. That is real indictment of the way one person feels for another. The ending feels transcendent as its content is. Terrific piece, as usual, by Mr. Ben Hunt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And I like how you use the phrase depths of despair to describe that right. I have to agree. It does have that kind of sense of sadness to it. Yeah. Now, Laurent, you make sure to let me know if any of those frogs are wearing crowns and look like they might be handsome rich princes looking for a kid.
Oh. Can you hear them again? I'm sorry about the frogs.
Oh, no. Now that I know what's going on with them, I think actually it's just a delight to hear them. And they're not as loud this time as they were the last time. They're just,
yes.
We had a hell of a thunderstorm. I mean, a real thundering, rolling thunder type of thunderstorm. And the lot across the road, which belongs to RG&E, and lies empty, it's like 3 acres, always knows this huge lake. So the moment that appears, they all cross the road, and they're further away now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That'll do it. That'll do it. Yep. Yep. All right, Phil, back to you.
I love listening to the frogs. I think they sound wonderful.
Me too. Me too. They're
I barely
very
heard
music.
You said I'm going to have to kind of tune in a little bit. I thought this piece by Ben was really well done. His work is always wonderful, and I really have to stop and think hard about it before I go to comment. But I can say that there's so much going on in the line. I wanted to jump down here in this one. I keep telling myself that I am Adam, not Snake, Kenobi, not Maul. But every day that I wake, I feel ripe for the fall. And Eve said, just take her, but I'm not that tall. Because she's in the moonlight. She is the moonlight, and I am the cold. And that she loves everything I'm not, but I am nothing at all. So she loves only dust. It's always intriguing when he puts things together, because he just has a wonderful way of bending the words to what he wants. And I think that is, you know, always pretty incredible. So I have to say that I thank you, Ben, and you did a fine job, as always. And, I think that Chad will see. Thank you, guys, from the home page. And
absolutely.
I just have to go grab, the phone now. Because I'm behind
what?
In my game here. I'm going.
What's that?
Nothing. Talking to myself. I'm going to say, hi. I have to get the next one. And Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read the next one. Only five. Well, this part. And here we go. Whenever you're ready.
You're fading. Well, as you move away from the telephone, Jane, you're fading slightly. My poor old ears are having trouble hearing you. Hermits make better poets. Dark night of the soul. Hermits make better poets. I learned hermit ways from my mom in her old age. Super glued to her porch, riding waves of memory. Caffeine, ceramic, and life cascades in rains of poetry. Empaths make better poets. I learned that for myself, a survival skill. Feel ecstasy in mourning dove's melody. Read defeat in homeless man's eyes. Be unafraid to admit, there but to the grace of God, though I. Lovers don't make better poets. Losers do. Those that have love rarely appreciate its worth, and those that lost it clearly know it's priceless. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Laurent, and what a beautiful write by Dark Knight of the Soul. A nicely written vignette. I like the centering. Now, centering isn't something I really do much myself unless a specific form calls for it. But somehow, like, when I look at it done by other poets, I have an appreciation for it. I like the imagery in this and how it speaks on the idea of how the experiences of life, especially the experiences that hurt, often sharpen the poetic pen. And, I really like this all the way through. But I especially like that second part. Empaths make better poets. I learned that for myself, a survival skill, to feel ecstasy in mourning dove's melody, to read defeat. And also at the end where he says, lovers don't make better poets, losers do. Those that have love rarely appreciate its worth, and those that lost it clearly know it's priceless. And I think that goes for anything, you know, love, any gift we have, any person we have in our life that meant something to us, it you feel it, how important that it is or they were once you have lost them. It's just a real strength to this, right? And I thought it was very well done. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is written in very clean, sparse. Sparse is the wrong word. And I hate to use the word simple. But she uses language in such a way that emphasizes clarity, that when she makes a point or uses a metaphor and an analogy, it really stands out strongly. Like super glued to her porch, riding waves of memory, caffeine meets ceramic, life cascades and things of poetry. What a great outcome. Caffeine meets ceramic, life cascades and things of poetry. One of the better lines, actually, that I've read concerning writing. The I don't know, this is something of a genius poem. Hermits make better poets, empaths make better poets, lovers don't make better. I'm kind of taken with this. It's a terrific poem.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And back to you, Phil.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this was a great piece by Dark Knight of the Soul. I think he did a great job. Each of the vignettes was wonderful. And I have to say, I was kind of surprised by the last one. Lovers don't make better poets. Losers do. Those who have love rarely appreciate its worth. And those that lost it rarely know it's priceless. And I thought his points were well made. And each one of the vignettes was very clean and concise. And I liked it. So excellent job, Dark Knight. And thanks for sharing with us. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment there. Yeah, I think maybe Neruda might slightly disagree. I think he might think that lovers make pretty good poets, but, you know, I guess it's a matter of perspective.
I kind of think that, you know, he had a point there in that last one, you know, because you don't know how much you have unless you actually lost it at one point or didn't have it. You know, it kind of makes you appreciate where you are more sometimes.
Yep. Well,
she didn't say that lovers don't make good poets. They just that losers make better ones.
There you go.
Hey, well, okay,
maybe.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah. I do like it, though. Like, very cool.
Absolutely. Now, Pam, I'm going to give you this next one by Paul Brock. It's called News from Mike Wobegon, Part 23.
All right. I'm glad I don't have to read all 23 parts. So,
oh, but didn't I tell you?
Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The News from Lake Wobegon, Part 23 by Paul Brott. Well, it was a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown out here on the edge of the prairie. Winter has pretty much bared its wrath, and the community is now going through its annual thaw as the frozen tundra shows signs of resuscitation while creeping crocuses peeking their floral purple caps through the sun-softened soils along the lake shore. Easter had just passed, and the promise of a manifestation through the resurrection of the body of Christ was preached from the pulpit of Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility Parish by Father Emily. The altar of the church was covered with Easter lilies as well as some hothouse rhododendrons to give it that look of solemnity which separates the high mass from all others. The children were most interested in the ensuing Easter egg hunt that the good folks over at the Chatterbox Cafe sponsor each year. It features a different grand prize each season for the child that finds the most hard-boiled chicken wannabes. This year, believe it or not, it's a chocolate hippopotamus. You heard that right. They decided to call this monster the Big Yazoo. Some thought that to be a bit too imperialistic. However, after further consultation, they all agreed that it's Easter after all, and they decided that awarding a piece of candy with this much magnitude and empowerment would only lead to more than one big giant burp. Well, that's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average. End poem. Oh man, that ending's funny. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, congratulations on that read. You, anybody who's heard the news from Lake Wobegon knows it has to be read in a certain way. You did a good job with that. I used to listen to the show all the time. So I love it. Well, I appreciate the fact that his opening and his close were the actual lines from the show. Gives it a sense of gravitas, of a continuation. And he's clever enough with his language, I think, that it seems as if this is exactly something that would have been read as the news from Lake Wobegon. I've got to go back and listen to some of those episodes. They were, first, it always puzzled me. There was a fascination about the way the small details, the so-called trivial things that you would talk about, so-and-so from the liquor store and had a cousin married. It's that just ordinary things that Paul continues that really well in this, discussing the chocolate hippopotamus. You heard that right? They decided to call this monster the Big Yazoo. It's written in a way as to at least fascinate me, and I hope others.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I have to agree. He does take the ordinary and really make it kind of almost extraordinary. I wonder if that's actually a picture of his pastor. He kind of looks like Elton John. Or maybe
no, that's PBS radio show host.
Oh, it okay. Okay, I did not know that. I wasn't
his name, I forget. If
they tell Elton John, I thought, no, not flamboyant enough. So
he would be flattered with that comparison. Elton John, hooray.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, too funny.
It was Garrison Keillor was his name.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, yeah, I really liked this, right? It was a wonderful story, right? I'm going to have to eventually check out some of the other parts because I bet they're just as entertaining. I really liked his use of the word bank and how he used it to create humor and in a way that flowed well. I like how it has, I think any of us who have been through Easter weekend with kids where we try to get them to sit through a church service, and tell them to patiently wait for the Easter egg hunt and the chocolate and all that stuff, you know, can definitely relate to this. I really like Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility was a great title for a church. And I don't know if that's an actual church name, but I thought it was clever. But the real humor to me comes in at the end, but also this, where it says, this year, believe it or not, it's a chocolate hippopotamus. You heard that right. They decided to call this monster the Big Yazoo. You know, awesome lines and very well done, quite entertaining. And what did you think, Jean?
You know, I thought this was a great job by Paul. Nicely penned piece, and I love the humor in it. I thought this year, I believe it or not, it's a chocolate hippopotamus. You heard that, right? They decided to call this monster the Big Yazoo. Some thought it would be a bit too imperialistic. However, after further consultation, they all agreed that it's Easter after all, and they decided that awarding a piece of candy with this much magnitude and empowerment would only lead to no more than one big giant. Congrats on the French face. I'm page 6. Thanks for sharing. Oh, my God. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. That next piece I'm going to put up. It's called Remember Me by Lawrence 67. And I'm going to give that one a read. Remember me. I'm back. Remember when you were 9 years old you load your stingray bite with the extended forks and hit that rock foot over the handlebars into the canal. Broken wrist, 10 stitches. And what about the senior prom? Got wasted and wrecked your daddy's station wagon? DUI for the first time. And don't forget your second wife, the narcissist. Still reeling over that one. Then senior citizen, backaches. Got the lumbago, something fierce. Hip replacement, coronavirus. Time to remember me.
Great read there, Jean. Something a little bit different from Lawrence 67.
Right.
Well-earned front page pick here. I like this. I mean, I think there was a bit of some humor because, you know, I don't think you can go without doing a little bit of humor, and that's great. You know, this one's kind of more dark and biting, especially, and don't forget your second wife, the narcissist. Still reeling over that one, but a great write all the way through. That I don't know if it's necessarily a nostalgic feel because it's not looking back at happier times, but you know it looks back at those memories about the more trying moments of life, from the bumps and bruises of childhood, to the aches and pains of adulthood, some we cause ourselves and some that just unexpectedly come upon us as we age. I find it very relatable with the, remember when you were 9 years old, you rolled out your stingray bike with the extended forks and hit that rock, flipped over the handlebars of the canal. You know, I don't know if we've all been hurt that bad, but we've all had our moments, you know, where we've had our bike accidents. And, of course, you know, back aches, you know, all of that stuff. Truly, truly relatable. And I enjoyed this look at Lawrence 67. So very well done. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I can't gainsay anything that you said. Nicely said. But what I'm really puzzled about in this is the way it starts and finishes. Remember me, I'm back. Okay, right off the bat, remember me, I'm back. Remember when you were 9 years old. It's a flip. What, the general audience, to himself when he was a child? Or is he personified bad luck, circumstance, whatever it is, but it's just odd that it seems to be another person or something that is the cause of the ill fortune is now back. Now, I'm sure it's probably not the way it goes, but it hit me initially that way. It was a little bit funny. He does a great job of picking out some of the more trying times in people's lives and laying it out for us quite simply but quite positively in a way that you can feel it. Very clever little piece.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think you have a really good point there, Laurent, on the whole idea of it being personification of bad luck or something like that. So very cool. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I thought I was doing good till Laurent opened his mouth. Now I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Damn. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what you made perfect sense, Laurent. It just makes mine look like it makes no sense now. But here's what I wrote. What the hell? It's time to look past some of the more serious issues in life and take a look at who we are, you know. And that, to me, was like the remember me, not all the things that have happened to you throughout life. So that mine makes no sense. So,
no, that's not true. Come on.
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense anymore.
It makes sense. As much sense as you ever make. Jesus, did I say that?
Well, you know what? You know that tongue twister, Sam? It was about 900 words. Yeah, that's the one. Got his name all over it now.
Well, poetry is open to interpretation, and right now our listening audience has been treated to three different interpretations. So there you go.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, it's a little confused. Okay, so here we go. Laurent, I'll put the next one up for you.
It's dangerous.
Okay, here we go. This one is called Russian Roulette by Gary Rubin.
I knew it was going to be dangerous. Russian Roulette, Gary Rubin. Top Russian to the Black Sea, bloviated oligarch, sunburn, commie red, a mankin, banana hammock, no fly zone, halfway house, insanity, inverse reality. Do mail order of American brides, scam Vladi's cronies, order Cossack vodka, Kahlua and milk, a white American drink, vodka and Kahlua. An Afro-American, looksy cocktail shaken with American ingenuity. Tighten another notch on the KGB borscht belt. A dollop of revenge floats with the sour cream. Has the round button been pressed in red square? Yet. But it's still one giant pickled red herring. Bubbler, we'll all be wearing a babushka. This doesn't end soon. And bones.
Great read there, Laurent. I like this one by Gary. I like Gary's writing a lot, and it's nice that he put a little bit about in his AN with Bubala is a Yiddish pet name for a loved one. Babushka is a headscarf worn by Russian and Polish women, typically associated with the poor and working class. So that really brings out that end line with the idea of how it's it bites on the thought of how current times and situations in Russia and Ukraine, you know, are going to affect on a world level. I tell you, Gary really knows how to play with words. I especially like Stop Russian to the Black Sea, bloviated oligarch, sunburn, commie red, a mankini, banana hammock, no fly zone. You know, I mean, just, I don't know, the wordplay is so great with the double meaning of things that you just really don't want to see. Tightening another notch on the KGB borscht belt, a dollop of revenge floats with the sour cream. I think bringing in the borscht and the pickled red herring was a nice touch to remind us of the history of Russian culture, but remind us how, you know, things have changed. At least that's kind of in part how I see it. It's really taking a look at the big picture of a society that's, you know, falling apart in a biting and humorous way. So very well done. And Laurent, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Like a lot of other people whose grandparents fled Russia in the early part of the 20th century, there are phrases that ring loud and clear in this. First of all, bravo for the use of the word bloviated. That's great. This is such a, it's almost as if you took a dart and threw it in a dartboard and whatever word it hit, you have to use next. Stop rushing to the Black Sea, bloviated oligarch, sunburn, commie red, a mankini, banana hammock, no fly zone. The moment you've read those first three lines, you realize that you're in the middle of an absolutely wonderful poem that oozes wordplay and references a very, very, very abrupt, short, yet mixed in a way as to engender fascination. Anyone who's ever sat down as a child and been served a cold plate of, or a cold bowl of borscht topped with sour cream has to sit and look at it and say, well, that bears somewhat of a resemblance to a piece of pie with whipped cream on top. I guess I'll try it. And the shock as it slips past your lips, and the sweetness of the anticipated whipped cream is now the somewhat sour taste of sour cream. You've got to be brave to finish it. It's a wonderful piece. It's warm, witty, it's sarcastic, it's topical.
Absolutely, you're right. And it does have that sarcasm to it that works so well. So great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I have been looking through all the comments on this. And the one thing that I noticed was someone had made a comment great poem, Gary, and I like the style that you've chosen to almost make the reader smile. The matters of this war are many layered and complex. The Russian and China's claims to attack made release on February of 2022 is worth a read. And it goes on. And you know, Gary's response to that, that's the only reason I'm mentioning it, is just this, thanks for sharing your supportive comments and your insights. The entire invasion on the reaction, this has more to do with a serious matter than anything else, and I probably never would have caught it if I hadn't looked at these comments down here and seen Gary's reaction back. I think it was a really well done piece, and I was a little lost. Well, I was a lot lost, I'm not going to lie. It did catch my attention when he said black kid, because at least I understood that. I knew where we were going. It was very well put together, and there was a lot of clever wordplay. I like tightening another notch from the KGB borscht belt. A dollop of revenge floats with the sour cream. Has the round button been pressed in red square yet? Yet. And it's still one giant pickled red hand. That right there is, it's kind of, I guess, a real serious note in the piece itself. But, I like the ending line. But below, we will all be wearing the babushka if this doesn't end soon. So, it's an interesting way to end that. So, Gary, I think you did a great job with this. I wish I could kind of be a little more in tune with it, but that's me as usual. But well done. And you guys on the front page, too. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely. So, great comment.
Yeah, it sounded really interesting because I was like a little lost. I was a lot lost. So I was trying to find my way around. And then you got that, right? No, I gave it to Laurent. That's right. Yes. Good job, G. I wouldn't even know how to pronounce it. But hopefully all that happened. Let's see now. Next piece, Pam, I'm going to have you read. This is by Garden Delight, and it's called No Way Home.
All right. On the cusp of something profound, we sink repeatedly below the water's surface, drowning our best intentions. Our good words fall unspoken to the ocean floor. We toured Positano, laughed, ate well, shopped in a haze of good feelings. We talked of the future, loving our plans and each other, revisiting Rome enthralled by surprise sculptures secreted in little neighborhoods. We grab each other's arms, chattering our excitement. Home again, we resume familiar poor habits, seemingly rudderless. I wanted to scream. Remember Pompeii? We are no different. Call our house Pompeii too. As its ghostly citizens, we prowl empty corridors, candles in hand that have no flame, loitering at vacant beds, holding conversations that don't exist as we fade away. End poem. Oh, what an absolutely stunning write by Garden Delight. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is a pretty deep write about relationships. What happens to them after time, what was intended, and what actually happened, and perhaps two different things. That first stanza speaks of being on the cusp of something profound, and yet we sink repeatedly below the water's surface, drowning our best intentions. We toured Positano, laughed, ate well, shopped, and that's the first stop in this revisiting of Rome and presumably Italy. We talk of the future, loving our plans and each other. And, you know, when you're on a trip, it's easy to be enthusiastic, positive, imaginative about the future and everything around you because you're not part of something new. This isn't the day-to-day humdrum. It's the world, and you're thrust into it in a different way. And all of a sudden, I think we are filled with the ambition of discovery, of adventure, of seeing new things, and it can work its way into every little part of our psyche. But once you return home, the old world resumes, and if the old world was staid and boring and lifeless, chances are it's going to be that way again. And that's exactly what is said in the poem. Home again, you resume familiar poor habits, seemingly rudderless. I wanted to scream, remember Pompeii? Yeah, they were in Pompeii, and it was maybe electric, but it was also empty. As the poem says, as its ghostly citizens, we prowl empty corridors. Pompeii, of course, was vulcanized by the volcano and left empty, despite the many bodies laying in place. After a while, conversations don't exist as we fade away. Really, to me, an emotional right about relationships. Yes, it does.
It truly is. And wonderful comment there. Yeah, I have to agree with you. You know, it's an emotional right. It does speak well on that whole idea of how you can get caught up in the vacation, in the excitement. It also feels like to me with the, for some reason, and I don't know what it is, but maybe it's the revisiting part. It makes me think of the whole idea of a second honeymoon and trying to rekindle the romance. But then, you know, go home again, we resume familiar poor habits. Yep. Seemingly rudderless, I wanted to scream. You know, and there's something about going from that kind of excitement, that kind of chatter to, you know, the no conversation, no, you know, real, like, connection with each other that makes you realize, you know, how much things are truly fading, how much things are truly falling apart. I thought this was beautiful all the way through with strong lines and definitely very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
You know, I thought this was just an excellent piece by Garden Delight. I thought it was a wonderful expression of thoughts throughout, you know. But when you get down to this piece here, and I have to agree with both of you in your comments, I have to say that. Home again, we resumed familiar poor habits, seemingly rudderless. I wanted to scream. Remember Pompeii? We are no different from our house, Pompeii, too. As its ghostly citizens, we prowl empty corridors, candles in hand that have no flame, loitering, as Aitken says, holding conversations that don't exist as we fade away. I just thought it was really well done, and I really enjoyed it. So excellent work, as always, Garden Delight. Definitely had some great poetry. And this is by Randall Wiltshire.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Jean.
I think I was mumbling to myself, talking to myself kind of thing on that one. This piece is called In a Euphoric Mood by Rhonda Yosri. The ornate chandelier sun dangles, low on from the sky ceiling, sprinkling amber light over the horizon, old grand ballroom stage. The instrumentalist, fragrant wind, is ecstatic, flashing showgirl trees that jovially swing with the rhythmic beat of his drum. Belly dancer waves with edgy, smooth, shiny caramel peekaboo curls falling around their shoulders dance with a lofty crowd for their live entertainment venue. Minds rest in this comfy baldachin. The ocean sedative, flavorful breeze massages his skin, blithely relishing the rhythm ebb and flow his waves dance performances. And
great read there, Gene. And what a beautiful write by Randy Yosri. I like how with this, it's not an extended metaphor necessarily, but it is, there's a consistency in theme with the mentioning the different types of dancing, you know, the ballroom stage, the rhythmical beat of drums, the belly dancer, the what was the other one that was mentioned? I'm trying to find it here. Oh yeah, the rhythm of the ebb and flow of his waves dance performance. I like how there's a delicate sensuality with this, and you know, mixed with the nature imagery that speaks so well on the movement of water and wind as it dances together. And I have to say that I think the most delightful imagery comes in that third stanza, belly dancer waves with edgy, smooth, shiny caramel peekaboo curls falling around their shoulders, dance with a lofty proud for the live entertainment venue. And that's just wonderful personification of the movement of the waves. And I think truly captures that very well. So excellent write. And very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
The poem utilizes imagery in a very convincing way, taking the ballroom as the stage, taking nature as ballroom stage, introducing us to the instrumentalist, fragrant wind, showgirl trees, rhythmical beat of his drums, introducing the belly dancer waves, which is a great move. Mind rests in his comfy balanchin. The ocean's sedative, flavorful breeze massages his skin, lively relishing the rhythm of the ebb and flow of his waves' dance performances. There's a calmness there. It's a peacefulness of sensation and utilizing the water, the ocean, the way that Rhonda did is really quite beautiful.
It truly is. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think it was great. I just something to say. Sorry. I think. New things to be screwed up, to say it. I think this is a beautiful piece. I think there was a lot of great personification in here. And, yeah, I did like the metaphor as well. I love the description. The imagery was great. And, it was just really, really well put together. And I loved it, you know. It was a beautiful write. So I have to say I really enjoyed it very much. So, Rhonda, you did a great job. And thanks for sharing with us. I'm going to do one more piece, and then we're going to go into the open poetry. Okay, so I think that's what I'm supposed to do with the memory.
Yeah, I think that's how it usually gets done. But sounds like a good plan to me.
I get lost. So this next piece I'm going to put up is by Richard Weissman, and it is called "This Is Where Wild Poems Die," and I'm going to play the audio for this. Yeah. So, don't mind the thunder, everybody. beginning.
This is where wild poems die, by Richard Weissman. This is where wild poems die, as forensic accountants crunch at their cloven hooves while cracking white peppercorns, then spilling them across melting buffalo mozzarella horizons at dawn. Old memories revive like toothache pain when caressed by raw sugar grains along dusky edges of the shadowy outback where seasoned flanks are smoked gray above a lonesome mesquite flame. Yes, this is where wild poems die, songs lasso, stirrup, or bit, crumpled in a steel mesh wastebasket with prayers to the deaf god against mediocrity and green-eyed money's hum. End of poem.
Great read and write there, Richard. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I heard this for the first time last Thursday. Somehow I missed commenting on it, which is a shame because I do love Richard's poetry. And I just thought this is a wonderful depiction of the frustration and the disappointments of writing in general and what sells and what doesn't in today's very commercial market. He uses words to evoke emotion and imagery that accents it. Old memories revive like toothache pain when caressed by raw sugar grains along dusky edges of the shadowy outback where seasoned flanks are smoked gray above a lonesome mesquite flame. What a wonderful imagery. To bring the tooth pain in as an old memory makes it a little more real, a little more visceral, because we all know that feels like that kind of pain that never leaves your head. Like a distant pain in your toe. You know, this one is very immediate, right between the eyes, right when you don't want it. Great piece.
Oh, I have to agree. Wonderful comment there. Yeah, I've actually been fortunate enough to hear this one, I think, at least three times. And I do say fortunate and mean it because I think it is just absolutely an amazing piece. In fact, I finally decided that I need to put it on my amazing rights list. You know, strong imagery all the way through, that it's written in a straightforward style, and yet at the same time there's a layeredness to it that works really well. I thought to me this spoke on the idea of the difference between writing for only money and writing that expresses your truth. Wonderful write all the way through. But I especially like that second stanza, old memories revive like toothache pain when caressed by raw sugar grains along dusky edges of the shadowy outback where seasoned flanks are smoked gray above a lonesome mesquite flame. It feels like the whole idea of smoked gray above a lonesome mesquite flame and, you know, speaks on the idea of just a slow lingering death of the true art form of writing. So wonderful poem and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was an excellent piece. I heard it last week as well. And I thought it was just a really well-written piece. And the part I thought it was great work and well-written. But I have to say, you know, this is where the wild poems die. Sans lasso, syrup, or bit, crumpled in a steel mesh wastebasket with prayers to the deaf god against mediocrity and green-eyed money. I thought it was just really nice work, and it was just well done by Richard. And a really worthy piece for a front page pick. So, excellent job. Excellent. Next piece I'm going to put up is by Selena, and it's called In Fields of Gold. And I have an audio for that as well. So let me put that on. And,
Lay me down in fields of gold, whispering tenderly as the long yearning locked within finally responds to your touch. The cool breeze caressing our fiery skins in dawn's blushing hue. Pour your desire upon me, beloved, like a tropical waterfall. The fragrant air, an aphrodisiac, mingling with your musky scent. As to your passionate fantasies, I eagerly surrender. So long have I dreamt of this moment, of your lips meeting mine, enfolded in the cocoon of your arms in resounding rapture. Your essence within me I hold, as we lay in fields of gold.
I'll lay you down in golden fields and hum a sensual song of tenderness, making your body arch and purr beneath the heat of my sun-kissed torso. Sweet melodies erupt from the ivory keys of our tangled limbs, carried like pollen on the breeze, feather down to our mutual fantasy. Dawn holds out its cooling blanket, our heaving breaths a rhythmic pulse upon the blush of your peachy flesh. And so we feel our spirits merge as two souls take flight from our passionate conjuring. And yes, we feel our dreams unfold as two lovers ride in fields of gold.
Wonderful read and write there by both Stelina and Average White Man. A beautifully written collaboration. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is a collaboration that seems to transcend what mere poetry becomes something akin to a performance piece with the articulation, the emotion passed into the voices as strongly as it is, music in the background, the lovely picture, really becomes something a little bit more than just a poem. I've got to say that the first line, lay me down in fields of gold, whispering tenderly, immediately pulls at my heart. It is reminiscent of some folk songs, and I can't think of which one, that kind of began the same way. But the fields of gold is such a beautiful image. You know, it's not fields of green, which might be more, a little more traditional. The fields of gold, I like the way it was handled. It's nice to hear both the male and the female voice separated into equal stanzas, each taking a look at how the other resides in their heart and what they do in those fields of gold. We feel our dreams unfold as two lovers rise in fields of gold. Beautiful. It's beautiful.
It truly is. And yes, you're right. It is a performance piece. And it was wonderful to see first the female voice and then the male voice come in as a response, both equally romantic. I really thought this was beautiful all the way through. Wonderful background music, beautiful reads by the both of them. I especially like in Dawn's Blushing Hue, pour your desire upon me, beloved, like a tropical waterfall, the fragrant air and aphrodisiac mingling with your musky scent. And Average White Man's park. I really like sweet melodies erupt from the ivory keys of our tangled limbs, carried like pollen on the breeze, feathered down to our mutual fantasy. I like the thought of describing tangled limbs as ivory keys. I thought that was beautiful. So wonderful, right, by both of them. And yes, quite the performance. Very well done. And your thoughts, Gene? Are you on mute?
There is.
Well, not only was I on mute, but I had finished my comment. Damn. I was either talking quick or moving slow, one or the other. I thought it was a beautiful collaboration, wonderfully tender and sensual. Excellent work. And the audio was wonderful between the two of them. They did a fantastic job with it. Yeah, there was something neat about her speaking first and then speaking after, instead of having them alternate throughout the stand. I liked it. But I really enjoyed the piece, and I want to thank them both for sharing with us tonight.
You're really fading, Gene. I'm sorry, but
I don't know what to do. I'm sitting right here. I haven't moved.
There you go.
But let's try this. See if I can put the phone a little closer, on my
chest. Much better.
Yeah. You should see the picture. anyway, I think it was a wonderful job. And so thanks to Selena and Average White Man for sharing with us. And congrats on the front page. No, that was it. That was not a front page. That was 86. That can't even talk now. Are y'all happy? Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And
okay.
Great comment. And I would like to point out that you went a whole 50 minutes before someone had to ask you if you were on mute. So,
see that?
Kudos on that.
I was trying to be good. I was trying to be good. But I have a really bad thunderstorm happening here. So I put myself on mute so you guys didn't have to listen to the thunder. And because I do sit right near the window. And the lightning's what I worry about. So I just forgot all about it. Anyway, Pam, I got the next piece for you to read, and this is called Drinking Alone by Hope Soul. Whenever you're ready.
All right. The night sky, which holds the moon, touches the daybreak of your dawn. Hold me close. I'm in need of you. Though we're hours apart, breath in stars that explore northern lights, which brings life to the loneliness. It crawls up my legs. The scaly cold touch causes this body to toss and turn, mourning empty space that grows. Red wine is warm just as you are. I spill it over my sheets. Watch as it slowly takes over pastel sheets. Arching my back, I reach outward, spreading my hands across gliding curves of me, your woman. Small splashes of dewy red kiss me over and over again. Merlot touches thick thighs, heels of my feet pushed downward into memory foam cushions, causing puddles to form, lifting 10 toes in the air. Slow rose trickles, works its way towards the fullest part of me. I gather in my palms the tang of alcohol, letting it pour from between my fingers onto my naked body, bleaches pale skin to a deep grape red, calling out your name in a light moan with no response, begging soon leaves pouty stained lips, dark hair sticks to my back, dripping drunk wine down my tailbone. I bleed out the desperation of want, dying a little more thin as each midnight comes. End poem. And wow, what an absolutely stunning sensual write by Hope. And Lauren, your thoughts?
This is a very powerful piece. The act of taking wine and pouring it over yourself as you pleasure yourself, thinking of your love who isn't there, is very erotic in my mind. Verlo touches thick thighs, heels of my feet push downward into memory foam cushions, causing puddles to form, lifting 10 toes in the air. Slow rose trickles, works its way towards the fullest part of me. That was outstanding. And the end line is very powerful as well. Oh, bravo, this is a great piece.
You know what, it truly is, and you're right. It does have a wonderful eroticism to it. And just a brilliant imagery and metaphors, beautiful sensuality. The idea of bringing your lover to your mind, your beloved to your mind, you know, with as you bring pleasure to yourself, and just being so lost in the moment that it doesn't matter to you. That's what really stood out to me, because, you know, I mean, to be so lost in that moment of pleasure, to not care that you were spilling red wine on white sheets, I think says a lot for the beauty of the moment. And I really like this all the way through, but especially the beginning of that second stanza. Red wine is warm just as you are. I spill it over my sheets, watch as it slowly takes over pastel sheets. Arcing my back, I reach outward, spraying my hand across gliding curves of me, your woman. Just wonderful lines all the way through, and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Oh, this was just a wonderful, sensual piece. A piece for longing for the touch of the one that you love. That was beautifully penned. The memory as well as that longing. Yeah. And the whole thing was wonderful, and I just went down here to towards the end, and I said, I gather in my palms the tang of alcohol, letting it pour from between my fingers onto my naked body, bleach its pale skin to a deep grape red, calling out your name in a light moan with no response, begging soon leaves pouty stained lips, dark hair sticks to my back, dripping drunk wine down my tailbone. I bleed out the desperation of one, dying a little more to this as each midnight comes. Just a wonderful piece, Hope, and just very well penned and very well put together. Excellent, excellent work.
Absolutely, great comment.
Yeah. That was awesome. Okay, so this one here. Put up next is by Stargazer777, and it's called The Blue Left for Your Eyes. I'm going to try and read it. I have to make it very large. Fondly, I recall there's new morning, and your voice rang on the face of the clock. Yesterday, I became a woman, beyond a film, beyond a draft, beyond a poem, and realized I was writing to someone who had already closed his finger along my unfinished body and cupped his ear to the whispers of my bleeding pen. Bashful wiles swagger out from hiding in the places they clench, and they wonder who you are. I never thought I'd be here. The thick rise of fog over the peak of Marin Bell is enough to hold me up, and I blush like a hot summer day born between them every time you hold my face in your hand. Even just once feels like a timeline of laughing. And I remember it was Monday when the sun dipped her tongue into the lake and left the blue eyes for your eyes, the blue for you, and left the blue for your eyes. And so, that neat piece.
Wonderful read there, Jean. Absolutely beautiful. And, yeah, I thought this was just an amazing write by Stargazer777. You know, I think to me, while there's sensuality in this, but there's also kind of a sense of longing and a sadness that comes through with it, you know, especially in the lines, my unfinished body and cupped his ear to the whispers of my bleeding pen. And I never thought I'd be here. The thick rise of fog over the peak of Maroon Bells is enough to hold me up, and I blush like a hot summer day born between them every time you hold my face in your hands. Yeah, I guess it does lean more towards sensuality. I'm not quite sure where my observations of sadness came in, but I think it's in part because of the undertone, the undercurrent. I don't know, it's just absolutely brilliant imagery and metaphors, a wonderful write on really just that intimate moment of having someone touch you, and even the little touches, like the side of the face and the connecting with the eyes, and just really feeling that sense of longing. Yesterday I became a woman beyond a film, beyond the drive, beyond a poem. I like that line there because it makes me think of the whole idea that sometimes, especially if poetry is a lot of how we express ourselves, we forget that there's other ways, you know, that we can express our sensuality through the physical act, through the spoken word, or even through a glance. And amazing write and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Excellent comment, Pam. Please allow me to piggyback. The sadness that you mentioned, I can understand why you saw that, because it begins, finally, I recall. All right, so those are rememberings, not present day. And then yesterday, I became a woman. Not today, but in the past. So right off the bat, there's a separation time that I think conveys a sense of sadness, if you will. I never thought I'd be here. She had never encountered that time before, but she encounters it now when she realizes that the person that she's writing to is someone who has already yielded to her, taken her in his arms, so to speak. Right? When she says, every time you hold my face in your hands, that is an extraordinarily intimate moment, because when you hold someone's face in your hands, generally it's a preparation for kissing or for gazing deeply into someone's eyes. I think two people inches apart gazing deeply into each other's eyes, not necessarily saying a word and not necessarily touching otherwise, establishes a kind of a psychic bond, an emotional bond between the two that can't. It's hard to replicate it with any other gesture. That moment of extreme tenderness and love when you cup someone's face in your hands, and hands on each cheek, and gaze deeply into the eyes is very powerful, as is this poem.
Absolutely, and great observations there, and thank you for pointing that out, because you're right. The beginning really makes us aware that it is a memory. So very cool. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a beautiful piece by Stargazer. She always has unique rights, and this is no exception to that. I thought it was just a well-penned piece, beautiful imagery throughout, and I love the way she thinks. I think that it's unique and different, and I like that. I told the last couple of stanzas, I never thought I'd be there. A thick rise of fog over the peak of Maroon Bells is enough to hold me up, and I blush like a hot summer day born between them every time you hold my face in your hand. Even just once feels like a time I was laughing, and I remember it was Monday when the sun dipped her tongue into the lake and left the blue eyes blue for your eyes. I think that is just... I love the way that that pulled together in the end. The piece is great all the way through. So definitely awesome work. So thanks for sharing with us.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment.
Yes. Okay, now Laura, I have four for you. Yes, all in a row. So the first one I'm going to put up is by Nuno Cardoso. Here you go. Whenever you're ready.
Yes, ma'am. Psychiatric leave. 12 days off, says the doctor in blue scrubs. Bipolar meds she prescribes. Now I'm half numbed, half naked, half penciled in between the lines of this electronic page that you read. I'm sort of half alive. 12 days off after losing my collective shit from buildup of refusing to die out in the light and to live in the dark. Corners of my mind where poems dance, the sound of a manic echo keeps all the hive mind bees alive. God bless. And no, I don't. And oh, I guess I do understand the end. Very long, drawn out.
Great read there, Lauren. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure since he put the screaming in his AN, you didn't need to do that. But, you know, it would have been interesting. I think we would have had people waking up and jumping out of their seats.
No, I wasn't going to do that.
But
that's actually a Pam poem. I gave it to you by accident, Laurent. It was supposed to be Pam. She's supposed to do the sound effects at the end.
Yes. But, yeah, all the sound effects and the screaming. Yeah, you missed it yesterday, Lauren. I had a poem. We had a poem that Gene assigned to me where there was a beep at the end. So I did a loud, like, beep, like an answering machine. And Gene didn't realize it was at the end. And she said she, like, literally just jumped out of her seat and thought, what the hell is he doing?
It was funny.
That's funny.
I was listening to Pam read more than I was reading along. What the hell is she doing? It just startled me. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
But yeah, I thought this was an absolutely brilliant write by Nuno, and you know it's raw, it's gritty, it's straightforward. It's very honest about a topic that's not always easy to write about, mental health, but I think is important to write about. I've in my younger years, and thankfully not recently, have spent time in the mental health ward for overdoses and other things that, you know, so I can look back at my life and the struggles I've been through and relate to this. And I think when you write about things, like when you write about mental health and you write about, you know, things like, you know, spending time in a psych ward or having to deal with medication adjustments, which don't always go well. You know, I've been pretty fortunate with my medications, but I know for a lot of people it's a struggle to find the right one. And, you know, I applaud and say kudos to anybody who writes about mental health, and so that they, because people who go through this can look at poems like this and say, I can relate, and I know somebody else is going through this. You know, both stanzas are wonderfully written. Yeah, I have to say I especially like the grittiness of 12 days off after losing my collective shit from building up of refusing to die out in the light and to live in the dark corners of my mind. You know, the whole, I don't know, it kind of speaks to the idea of trying to find that balance and knowing that it can often be difficult to do so. So excellent write and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Great comment, Jen. The decision to live in my mind where poems dance to the sound of a manic echo that keeps all the hive mind bees alive. It is kind of an admission that the mind never shuts down. You're overthinking, perhaps. You're creating a tension in your brain due to its overactivity, and that builds up and builds up almost like a pressure cooker. And at some point, there needs to be release. And that pressure cooker pops off and the steam howls, just like a person when they lose their collective shit, which I thought was a great little bit of phrasing. You know, if you can't keep the voices in your mind quiet from time to time, it can be an awful amount of stress. It says just a little bit of, I wouldn't say humor, perhaps, but kind of a dark levity comes to mind just from the word choices. I like the way he said, I'm half numbed, half naked, half penciled in. You see the lines of this electronic age, therefore half alive. I see that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great observation there. Very cool. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I said this was a well-penned piece by Nuno, well-stated brevity. And I also had to go along with the second stanza, you know, 12 days off after losing my collective shit from buildup of refusing to die out in the light and to live in the dark comes off my mind where poems dance to the sound of manic echo. It keeps all the hive mind alive. I thought that was just a well-worded stanza of the two. Not that the first one was not, but that's the one that really caught my attention. So excellent job, Nuno, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight.
Definitely. Great comment.
Yeah. Next piece I'm going to put up is called Immortal Decay by Laurent Durant. So, Laurent, whenever you're ready.
I'm ready. Immortal Decay. Dark statuary exists within leafy folds of web growth, so green the world is a shade of every frog clinging to the belly of its layered growth. Moisture slides from veined surfaces, slipping slowly from shamrock to seaweed, from pine to pickle, and parakeet to pear. Slabs of rock lie heavy on earth, locked from light for millennia. Straight lines and right angles extend in an invisible world. Cyanobacteria and chloroplasts are the painter's pigments, distributed with a brush wielded by the lady herself. Places and phases of men, swallowed whole by a greengrocer's wares. Pyramids to the gods, stained with sacrificial red, now molded green. Bones lay blistered, white and mopped, cast down hillsides where their feet earth wrapped in vine, ant highways carved from marrow crisscross one another. Silence of the bones echoes loudly. Strange shadows lurk in odd places, shapeless between blinks of the eye burning as noonday zenith. Nothing is dry and desiccated as it dies. Bumped with rot, faltering life swells and bursts, decomposing as fungus and molds creep and feast. Monsters in a slow motion horror film. Decay, unlike man, is immortal, and entropy proves it pitiless. End thought.
Wonderful read there, Laurent. I really like how you take something as simple as mildew and decay and remind us that it's not simple. It is a process that takes over. I did get a kick out of where you say moisture slides from veined surfaces, slipping slowly from shamrock to seaweed, from pine to pickle and parakeet to pear. You know, because when you get to the pear, of course, I think about, you know, the neglected produce drawer of good intentions that never quite get finished. But the fact that we see the idea of the Mother Nature painting with this mold, this mildew that comes with the passing of time and changes the presentation of ancient stone and trees and hillsides. And it's such a powerful representation of death and how it comes to everything and everyone, and a powerful representation of change that it cannot be avoided. I really like this all the way through. The imagery is great. I especially like bones laid blistered, white and notched, cast down hillsides where they feed earth wrapped in vines, ant highways carved from marrow crisscross one another. And then the ending lines with decay, unlike man, is immortal and entropy proves a pitiless mistress. And I like how it becomes at that point a look at the idea of, you know, how life is very limited. So stunning, right, and very well done.
By the way, Pam, the tamarack, the seaweed, pine, the pickle, and parakeet, the pear, was supposed to represent the various shades of green.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad you said something, because I did not pick up on that. I
wondered about that, whether I should write it that way. I decided to take a chance.
That is quite clever. That is quite clever. But, yeah, immediately I think of my, like I said, my neglected produce drawer of good intentions gone awry. So, but wonderful, right? And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, the imagery was very well done, Marlon. Yes, it was nice of it. We're good. Or pretty. But at least that came to mind. But I thought it was, you know, an amazing, it was amazingly well done. Let's put it that way. Nothing can escape the reality of decay. I have to say that. You know, it happens to the best of us. You know, I love the video you put at the end, too, by the way. I would have known. Silence of the bones echoes loudly. Strange shadows lurk in odd places. Shapeless between...
Well, I was going to do one on corpses, but it was a little gross.
Yeah, you could have. Yeah.
I mean, really gross.
But yeah, so I have to say that the last two stanzas and the couplet at the end are the ones that I picked and I thought were, you know, I don't know, they just tied it up for me in the end, and I thought it was well done. So a great piece and definitely an intriguing topic. But
Thank you.
That's it. What we do, right? Okay, so we're out of there. And the next one. Why would I have it there? It's going to stay right. Next one I'm going to put up is called The Lady Madeline by Poetic Picasso. Can do this. Damn, I'm forgetting how to do things. There we go. And I have an audio for this one, so let me play that first. And here we go.
Runrith Usher, the poor gent that was my old friend, had presented himself to me as a hoary and fragile man seen, and his peculiar mien was that of a scared namby-pamby, for the celerity's tear in his dilated eyes was truly palpable. The house of Usher was towering and had a dark gothic shade, covered by the menacing guise of the sable eyes of the ravens. On the gable roof of a dilapidated mansion nearby the adjacent arm, but it had a noticeable thin crack extending to the front of the house. The reflection of the moon had shone upon the uptenebrated night, as the sound of the flapping wings and croaks of ravens were audible, and the brazen wind thus blew the eerie echoes of the howling over the damp and dank moat erected on the top of a steep rock. I could hear the dreaded gnawing of the horrid rats with their beady eyes, as they had gnawed at the fading wood of the walls of visible erosion, and the sturdy planks of the floors would creak upon every footstep taken, but an unknown weeping and breathing had resonated behind the creepy walls. Flashing lightning and roaring thunder had increased by the passing minutes. The roaring dewdrops of rain fell upon the slippery roof in glass windows. The hour of the vintage clock had rung in the parlour below the rust. I had sensed the presence of an unbidden visitor that was no stranger. Suddenly, I had heard the scream of a woman in the gasping of Roderick. I had dashed from my chamber to find him completely discomposed, for his terrifying eyes were evidently bulging with heightened trepidation, and it seemed he had witnessed an unthinkable ghost in person.
Will she not be here anon? Is she not hurrying to upbraid me for my haste? Have I not heard her footstep on the stair? Do I not distinguish that heavy and horrible beating of her heart? Madman, madman, I tell you that she now stands without the door. Who? 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 I asked. The Lady Madeline. Behold!
In the poem.
Bravo there, Frank. What a wonderful performance. Such a delight to listen to. Well, delight's probably the wrong word for Dark Rite, but yes, brilliant performance. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I don't know whether this piece is a better as a demonstration of his writing ability or of his acting ability. It really fits both. And the combination of both at the same time is always a pleasure to sit back and listen to and let his word painting a little bit grim this time around and enjoy it, because that's what it's for. It's a great take on the original House of Usher. And his use of words is always special, although I resent every time he uses a word that I don't know the meaning of, so there were three or four resentments sprinkled in there. That's my own issue. No, bravo, Frank. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And you're right. It is a performance piece that highlights both his gift for reading and writing. I have to say, I like how he's captured with his word choices the spirit of the House of Usher, which happens to be one of my favorite Edgar Allan Poe short stories. That and the Cask of Amontillado, although I know I slightly mispronounced that word there, the name of the wine, but that's my other favorite one, but I like this, the imagery in it, the darkness, the performance, all the way through, and how the intensity that starts to happen especially at the end as the ghost is seen and the madness comes through. It was funny. I almost left a second comment for Frank, but, you know, I thought, well, I probably should behave myself, but I'm not going to behave myself. I was going to tell him that I wrote a poem called Mistress Madeline, and I would like to say that I find his poem so much more elegant than mine. However, mine has more whips. So,
don't say. You tell it, babe. You tell it.
So, yep, but I like the use of the phrase namby-pamby. You don't see that too often. It gives it, that and other word choices, give it a very classical feel to it. So, wonderful, right, and very well done. And, Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I teased up my wording a little bit from the last time I commented, but I thought it was excellent work by Frank. Wonderfully dark piece. A great audio as well. You know, his audios are always very good. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fabulously penned, and I think he did a great job. So excellent job, Frank, and thanks for sharing. Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me see. For my next magic trick, I'm going to put up a piece called Clarion Call by Pam Wright. So, Pam, whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, I would like to, before I go into reading, mention that I wrote this for a contest for Eric Svensson, where he provided the first two lines of the poem, and then you had to finish it. And it was supposed to be a Petrarch sonnet, or not Petrarch, sorry, Petrarchan sonnet. So it goes like this. Ribald rooster's clarion call crucifies darkness, cracks open the last embryonic day's stay, where absolution seeks absurdness, while peacock fiddlers prance and play. And I, in all my insomniac inwardness, unveil melodies of mystic May to soften ribs of solemn starkness. We shall seek straight paths of cobblestone, to find the wilderness in verdant fields, where lays history within the bones, mysteries and seeds attuned do yield, never walking in the mist alone, philosophers mourn while with quill to wield, end poem. And Laurent, your thoughts.
Well, I'd like to begin with a question. What is a Petrarchian, whatever it is, Petrarchian sonnet? Does that follow certain rules, or is it just a sonnet?
Well, you know, I think it's, I do know it's laid out differently. It has, let's see here, it says in the Petrarchan sonnet is divided into two stanzas. The octave, which is the first eight lines, followed by the answering sestet, the final six lines. So there's not that couplet. And then the rhyme scheme is either ABBA, ABBA, CD, ECDE, or CD, 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 And the only thing that I have to admit to being slightly confused about, but I thought, well, maybe it's just, you know, I think Eric probably knows more about the form, but I always see sonnets as having 10 syllables each, but because the two lines that he offered up did not have 10 syllables each, I thought, well, I'm not going to worry about making the rest of it match that, but rather just make sure that it has the line amount and the rhyme pattern that he was looking for. If that makes sense. I hope that answered.
Sorry, I didn't mean to drag you into that length of a definition, but I appreciate knowing what it is and what you were trying to do. Everybody says, you know, realizes the first lines in the poem, the last lines in the very perhaps the most important ones, and you certainly did that with this one. Ribald rooster's clarion call crucifies darkness, cracks open the last embryonic day's stay. The use of stay as a word for stopping is I really like. The mixture of embryonic along with the word cracks is a delightful, gives me a delightful version of an egg. And the rooster crucified darkness is also very good. It's a magnificent first couple of lines. Let's see. The absolution seeks absurdness is also excellent. The insomniac inwardness, ribs of solemn starkness, all the way through here. Your use of words weaves imagery in your own unique voice. There's nothing here that I've seen before. That's one of the things I like about it. That clarion call, nicely done.
Thank you very much. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, considering I don't know what that sonnet is, nor did I catch your explanation of it, because after the first three sentences, I was going again and lost. But it's okay. That's how I do things. I cannot help it. But I think that this was really well written, and I think that it the words played well with each other between the first two lines and everything else. I did, you know, I did go, okay, I like this. But we shall seek strayed paths of cobblestone to find the wilderness and verdant fields where lays history within the bone, mysteries and seeds attuned to yield, never walking in the mist alone, philosophers mourn with skill to yield. I like that a lot. I think that was a great stanza, and I think that this is a wonderful piece. So, and congratulations on the silver.
Well, thank you very much.
Very good, very good. I have to say I like it. Let's see. We have time for probably one more. So let me get that back. Okay. I'm going to grab this one. Lauren, I'm going to ask you to read this one. And this is by Luke J.R., and it was called Summer Serenity. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Yes. Summer Serenity. In front of the two ovular orbs lay a garden resting for centuries, where flowers bloomed. Research entries through the purplish petals, blossoming nettles, the sun's holy light begins to settle. Summer kissed from Mother Nature, every petal. Two steps forwards, heavenly white marble walls of creeping vines, flowers of all kinds, all different size, since the moment when they realized this summer blessed garden, petrified. The gardener who moved in silence. Window to the left with little to no view, wall to the right with opaqueness anew. Walking through the grass, honeydew nectar collected by the honeydew bees, where the summery garden rested at ease. For this kind of beauty surely pleased those who visited or often appeared. Upon the rectangular, oddly shaped tiles, perfectly cut for those who admire every part of beauty, magnificent fire through a summery blaze of garden-like wire, feeling the warmth within each tile, on the bare feet, in every while, where they found a summery garden, a beautiful sight to explore. Meanwhile, the final destination being a singular door, they approached the garden once more, with uncertainty drifting in their minds. Summery garden held inner lights. Through the open door, darkness is all the orbs fading, eternal blindness. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Lauren. And a beautiful write by Luke J.R. Absolutely fascinating. You know, I like that title, Summer Serenity. It's a very gentle title. And it's interesting because I feel like, you know, summer becomes a metaphor for the youth of life and that passes by so quickly. There's definitely a feeling, thoughts of death within that end stanza, with final destination being a singular door. The summery garden held inner light through the open door, darkness and all, two orbs fading, eternal bliss. And it's interesting to me because a lot of times when it comes to seasons representing a time period in life, you see poems about winter representing death. So to go to the beauty of summer, the warmth of summer, which represents those younger years, to that moment of crossing over to another plane of existence, I feel like it in part speaks about the whole idea of perhaps someone of an older age who has Alzheimer's and is trapped in their younger years mentally before passing over. I really like that end stanza, but I also really like the second stanza with two steps forwards, heavenly white marble walls with creeping vines, flowers of all kinds. Wonderful, beautiful written lines and very well done. And Laurent, you did an amazing read of that. Your thoughts?
The Summer Serenity contains a peacefulness that that morphs into that moment when we approach death, as you said in the final stanza. It's starkly beautiful piece. Again, as you said, the who expects the summer to contain that kind of emotion, that kind of realization of death, or perhaps those moments before we pass through that singular door. This kind of poem can hit you hard if you're not ready for it, and it did me.
That is true, absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean?
Of course I am at the end of the show. I had to end it right. I thought it was a great write, and I really enjoyed the imagery in the piece. I love this stanza, along with a few others, you know. Window to the left, at middle to no view. Wall to the right, with opaque nothing new. Walking through the grass, honeydew nectar, planted by the honeybee. Where the summer garden rested at ease, because this kind of beauty surely pleased those who visit it for often a piece. Yeah, I just kind of like the way it sounded to my ear. So great job, Sarah, and thank you for sharing with us. Great show, guys. Thanks for, hanging in there and helping out, you know, helping read and comment and all that good stuff. Pam, thanks for stepping in. Good to have you call in and comment. And, hopefully we will be back soon. If not, well, I have one more week left. In the meantime, join us tomorrow night for part two of the Twisted Sisters. Bring your favorite poet to the stage, and we will be enjoying that. After Midnight with Rex and Pam tonight. And hope everybody has a good one, and I'll talk to you all soon. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you both. Very well done. Great show.